Western science today now suggests that we are bathed in a field of living and intelligent energy. This field is described as a presence. It's everywhere all the time. It's a field that's been here from the very beginning, the time that physicists call the Big Bang. It's a field of energy and intelligence that is said to respond to genuine states of human emotion. Except for the name given to this field, it sounds very, very similar to the creative force described by our ancestors throughout ancient, indigenous, religious, biblical, and pre-biblical traditions. If we are speaking of a presence, of a force that has been here from the beginning, the moment that time began, if we're speaking of a force that's already everywhere, all the time, and we're speaking of a force that responds to human emotion, a force that answers our prayers, what does it sound like that force might be? Except for the language, it sounds like the presence of God. It may very well be that the field that science is now recognizing, this previously unrecognized field that our equipment is now able to detect, and the understandings that are shared with us in our most cherished traditions may in fact be speaking about precisely the same field. Now, the question, as we arrive at our understandings of this field in our lives, what does it mean to us in terms of our daily lives? What does it mean to us in terms of our families? What does it mean to us in terms of our civilization and where we're going? I'm going to reflect back upon a conversation that I had with another native friend of mine in the desert southwest. And this is a different friend. This isn't David from the story of the rain that I shared earlier. This is another friend, one of the elders, who shared with me a perspective that apparently is commonly held in the inner circles of these traditions, although it's not a perspective that I've heard outwardly and openly very much. And perhaps from this perspective, it may help to give us a framework, a point of reference in terms of where we're going with all of this information today. In these native traditions, they tell of a time in human history, a long, long time ago, when we lived our lives very differently from the way we live our lives today. There were few people walking the earth. We were closer to the earth. We understood our relationship to the forces of nature and the world around us. We understood that relationship so well that we interacted with the forces of nature in responsible and caring and wise ways. And we needed very little external technology to support us in our lives. The indigenous traditions that I'm speaking of call this the first path. This is the first path that humankind walked on the face of this earth. And then something began to happen over time. Over time, for reasons that are never really well explained in these traditions, and I continue to search to understand precisely why what I'm about to share with you came to pass. But over time, we as humankind, our species, began to stray from that path that linked us so closely with the world around us and the forces of nature. We began to get lost, is the way that the path is described. And the more we strayed and the further we found ourselves from the understandings that tell us that we're part of something greater, that we're part of the world around us, that we're part of all that we see, the farther we strayed from that path, the more we longed to have that wisdom and that path once again. And what we began to do is we began to build a world outside of our bodies. We began to build machines and devices that were extensions of our perceptions, surrogates of our senses of touch and taste and smell and hearing. We began to build machines outside of our bodies that literally mirror, they mimic what we have become inside of our bodies. Now, I find this very, very interesting because in the 20th century, what Western science has begun to understand is that within every cell of every human body, we have, for example, 1.17 volts of electrical potential. The average human embodies about 50 trillion cells in their body. And every one of those 50 trillion cells has about 1.17 volts of electrical potential. You can do the math. That is a tremendous amount of electrical potential, 50 trillion times 1.17 volts. We carry that potential in our bodies. From this perspective alone, you tell me, what virus, what bacteria, what kind of electromagnetic force field has the ability to stand up against 50 trillion times 1.17 volts of electrical potential? And we just begin to understand how powerful our bodies, the potential of our bodies really are. Every cell of our bodies has the potential to function like an electrical circuit, and it does function as a circuit, a computer chip in many respects. The cells of our bodies are capacitors. They store energy. They release energy. They are resistors. They transmit. They receive. We are informational storage and retrieval devices. We are all of these things within each cell of our bodies. And from this perspective, what the native traditions say makes tremendous sense. The world that we've built around us are extensions and mimic these very functions that we carry on within the microcosm, the most minute element of each cell of our bodies. Well, the tradition continues, and it says that we as a species will continue to build mimics, to build mirrors of what our bodies do in the world around us. We will continue to build a technology outside of our bodies, and the more complex the technology in our outer world becomes, that becomes the barometer that tells us how far we've strayed from that original path. Because as we remember our relationship to the world around us through our bodies, what we find is we need less and less of the complexity of the external world. I think this is fascinating. It's a fascinating possibility. What it suggests, for example, is that when we look into the remnants of some of the most ancient civilizations on this planet, and I've worked with archaeologists and anthropologists who have done some of the excavations in these sites, and they say, well, you know, these people were pretty sophisticated. They were able to build three-story buildings, and they had water purification systems. But they weren't nearly as sophisticated as we are, because we never found any evidence of their toaster or their television set or their VCR. And when I hear stories like this, what I say to them, I share with my archaeological and anthropological friends and colleagues, I say, yes, we may not have found the toasters and the VCRs and the stereos. However, every one of the functions that makes a toaster toast and a VCR and a stereo do what they do, do you know we mimic those in the cells of our bodies? What if the civilizations that you're excavating were so sophisticated, they were so advanced in their understandings, that they did not need the complex external technology as we've built today? Then what would you think about those civilizations? And they look at me with their eyes wide open and they say, you know, that is a very, very different way of looking at our past, and it's a very real possibility, certainly worth considering. Well, from the native perspective, again, as we continue to build this tremendously complex external world, what we're doing is we are going to greater and greater lengths to remind ourselves of the power that lives within our bodies. And at some point, they say, we will once again recognize that power. And the moment that we do, then the path that we're living now, the path that's called the second path, comes to a close. And once again, we go back and we begin to walk the first path, where the world around us is greatly simplified because the world within us is completely realized, where our relationship that we've described, the thoughts, feelings, and emotions in our bodies are the triggers that change the chemistry in our bodies, that produce the healing in our bodies, produce the healing in the bodies of others, that interact with the forces of nature in acts of weather, such as the story I shared with David, and with the animals and the food sources around us. So it's a perspective that I wanted to share because it may give us a framework to help understand why we've done what we've done and where we're going.